This is Writing Lessons, and I'm your host, Silas House. In each episode of Writing Lessons, we look at a different topic of creative writing. Well, today's guest needs no introduction. We are with one of the greatest storytellers of our time, Barbara Kingsolver. Thank you so much for joining us, Barbara.
Thank you, Silas. I really appreciate your inviting me to this chat.
Well, we could not do this podcast and not have you own it. So,
well, thanks.
That you're giving us some of your time. Well, first of all, someone asked me the other day what the difference is between setting and sense of place. And as writers, I think we talk a lot more about sense of place is the way we talk about it. And I have my own definitions of each, but what would you say is the main difference between setting and sense of place?
Sense of place has trees in it. I mean, when you just say those words and I think about it, or if it's a desert, there aren't trees, but whatever. I think that sense of place is much more holistic. It involves everything alive that's you know, creating a context for this piece of writing in addition to the humans. Whereas when you say setting, I think of you know, a theater, a set. I think of maybe a kitchen and a kitchen table with people sitting around it. I think about the sort of human built construct, you know, the sort of the human constructed part of a story. But if I talk about sense of place, then we're going outside. Even if, and I mean, you know, I'm just examining this as I say it to you, because I've never really answered that question or even thought about it. It's a great question, by the way. But even if a whole novel took place inside, let's say in a hospital room, to me, it would matter whether that was a hospital room in Tennessee or in New York City. And that's because of what's outside of that room. And it's not just the trees, it's the way people talk. But fundamentally, it includes the relationships that those people in that hospital room have with their families and their work and their, you know, sort of all the things that go on outside the room and outside the building.
Yes, I think you're saying exactly the way I think of it. I think of setting as something that's much more concrete, and sense of place is much more abstract. It's like we have to articulate all of these sort of, you know, big notions of what makes a place,
yes,
what culture, etc.
Yes, exactly. It does, of course, include human culture. That's a very important part of it. But human culture is so formed also by the land, and you know, where people live, whether it's in the country or city, influences what they do for a living and what their relationship is with their neighbors and all of those things.
Yeah, that makes me think about, like, in Demon Copperhead, how important football becomes,
exactly,
you know, to the narrative, and how that's a part of small town life and things like that.
Right. And how it's, I mean, football might be a part of many lives, but where I live and probably where you grew up, high school football, the Friday night game, is more important than, I don't know what you could say, like, what's the equivalent in New York City? It's like as important as the Olympics. It's so outsized in terms of how much people think about it. You know, the fact that in the country, you know, in a rural place like where I live, the people who are filling the bleachers at a Friday night football game, a high school football game, are not just the parents of the kids on the field. It's the town and the whole town. You know, if you have a losing coach, the whole town cares about that, not whether they have kids in school or not, because it's a part of your local pride and your local identity.
Exactly. Yes.
To write the story I did about a young man growing up where I live, I had to become acquainted with football, and I had to go to, you know, I mean, obviously I've been to many high school football games when I was, growing up, and when my kids were growing up and stuff, but I had to go and pay more attention to the game, not just the marching band.
Exactly. It's like if you're writing about something in particular, even if it's something you might have been familiar with, you have to go into it with that writer's hat on, right? And look at, and even from
Yes.
your character's point of view as well.
Yes, exactly. You have to pay attention to exactly the things that your characters need to know about, which is why research is such a huge part of Sense of Place. Even, I had a conversation recently with a writer who had finished her, who had published her first novel. And there were several of us, in this conversation, all, more experienced novels. And she said, "I had to do so much research for this one. I'm looking forward to my next novel. I don't think I'll have to do any research." And we all, the rest of us, burst into laughter because research is, and of course she, she did find out, she just wrote me to find out that, to tell me that was true. Research is integral to writing. It's so much a part of the writing. And when it comes to Sense of Place, even writing about a place that I've lived in my whole life, like Demon Copperhead, I still had to research things like the real details of football and what it's like to be in, football practice and all that. There are still things that you're going to have to research. But going back to what I first said, my kind of first free association with, what makes a sense of place is it has trees. I believe that you really have to know the biology of a place, the landscape of a place to write about it. And I have never and would could never write about a place unless I've spent time there myself. It's so important to know the lay of the land. So for example, when I wrote The Lacuna, half of it takes place in the United States, in a part of the country I know real well. Half of it pl takes place in Mexico City, and some other places in Mexico, including sort of a wild jungle place. I had to go there. I had to spend weeks and weeks and weeks in the exact places, the exact neighborhoods of Mexico City, the exact a place like I invented this place called this wild jungle place called Isla Pixol, but I went to a place that was like it because there is no substitute for direct experience for a writer. You can read all the books you want to about, or even watch all the movies that you want to about a place, but you're getting someone else's interpretations and you're missing a whole lot of stuff that doesn't come through in either in words or in a movie. I always say to write about a place, I have to know what it smells like.
Exactly. Yes.
And even though you're not gonna like write be writing about smells on every page, that's part of it because the smell of a place tells you how you feel about it, like the desert, the way the desert smells after it rains. That's so much a part of living there. And it influences your emotions, the weather, the more than just the smells, the weather, the heat or the cold, the way the, like if the air is gritty or clear, kind of where how that grit feels in between your teeth when you're in the desert. All those details, you're only going to know if you've experienced them yourself. And then your job as a writer is to get that sense of reality onto the page by figuring out which of those details will pass that experience out from my brain into your brain as a reader.
One of the things I think is so interesting about writing is we have to know so much of that stuff. When we actually get to the page, 5% of all that may show up, right?
Maybe.
But
Yeah, at most.
somehow we've been able to pick the 5% that really articulates that to the reader, and we don't even know how we do that, but we have to get
No,
to
we
the page.
don't. But you're exactly right. Just in the same way that I feel like we know so much more about our characters than we put on the page. You have to know everything. When I begin a novel, I have files on all the important characters where I just write down everything about them, like starting from a very early age. What were they afraid of in childhood? What was their, first, when was their, what was their first love? What was their first heartbreak? When did they get their first bicycle? I mean, I would bore you to tears if I put all that stuff in the novel, but I have to know it because those details add up to a fully formed person who will behave the way and speak the way that person does on the page. The sensation of realism that we create that makes people think that you're actually basing everything on real people, which we're not. We're inventing it, but we invent it from this really fertile ground of all the stuff that we've already figured out about that person. I think it's also true of sense of place. We know so much more about a place than we're putting on the page, but the fundamental skill is to just look at that movie. I mean, everybody writes differently, but I see a movie in my mind,
Too.
a movie that I can also smell and taste, but I watch this movie in my mind of this novel that I'm writing, and I look around the room and I look for that one thing, those one or two things in the room that characterize it, that will tell you, oh, this is an old lady's house who lives alone and collects things, or this is a young architect's house who has every surface clear, or you find that detail that carries weight. And we spend so much of our time as writers figuring out what not to put on the page, because if you put everything, it would be tediously boring and you would never even get through the first scene. So it's all a question of pulling out those things that kind of are the shorthand for the bigger picture.
I talk to my writing students a lot about knowing what serves the story. I
Yes.
think that's sort of what you're talking about there is we're pulling out what serves the story, what serves that particular scene, what serves that character, et cetera.
And it is such an important process, because really nothing is allowed to be there if it doesn't serve the story. And you've in student writing, you'll get a story and there's a dog that runs through the scene from time to time, and you say, "Now, what is this dog doing here?" And they say, "Well, that's my dog Goldie." And you have to tell them, "Sorry, Goldie has to go. Goldie can only be in this story if she's essential to the story. If it's the same story more with or without the dog has to go." Same with visual details. You can't put them in there just to pretty the place up. You have to put them in there because they actually move the action of the story forward. They tell you something about what's going to happen.
Well, when writing about where I'm from, I have always felt like an insider and an outsider. And I think there's real value in being both of those things. Can you talk a little bit about that concept for yourself?
Sure. I think you're right, because if you're too fully inside of a place, you don't know what's special about it. I only really understood. I didn't even really think that much about being from Kentucky till I left Kentucky and heard from all directions what Kentuckians are like. And of course, I didn't really appreciate very much of it, because they were all mostly, well, all, I'm going to say, 100% wrong about what Kentuckians are like. We aren't all one thing, but we're mostly not like, those backwards people that my classmates had seen in Deliverance. So then, I spent a lot of time away from my homeland. Never felt at home anywhere, not completely. I was always homesick for the mountains, always wanted to come back. And so I had a lot of years to think about, okay, what do I miss? Because when I was growing up, I just couldn't wait to get out of there. I thought, oh, watch me kick the little town dust off my shoes and go have a big life. And so come to find out, my biggest and best life was going to be lived here. So that gave me the experience of really looking at the place as an outsider and seeing stuff, just like you can't really see your own marriage or your own family when you're in it. You're just too invested in your own sort of, it's the only world you have and you have no context for it. Living outside of it made me think so much about community, how people depend on each other, what's great about that, as well as what drives you crazy about that. The way people talk, the way people tell stories, the way people make things. The way people know their neighbors and want to know their neighbors, all this stuff, my education about Appalachia really kind of took place in my heart while I was living away from the place. And so now I've been back here for decades, but I feel like that was an invaluable experience for me in understanding what makes this place special. Just like I always think, if kids are lucky enough to get to college, the best thing they can do is study abroad, go out of this country, because I feel like you can't really understand the United States of America until you've been somewhere else and looked back at it. Sort of get outside of the stories we tell ourselves. And learn, what are other people's stories? And that's how you find out, what's my story.
Yes, and I think just being an artist makes us outsiders to some degree, right? Even if we're an insider in a community.
Yes, because we're examining and we are leaving, we're stepping away from our own personal point of view. I feel like to write fiction, you have to be willing to put yourself aside, yourself and your prejudices, because you're going to be entering into the minds or the sort of the ambitions or fears or whatever of all these different people in the story. And you have to be able to understand that each of those people thinks they're the good guy. I mean, unless they're living with some disgrace and shame, but even still, like everybody comes from a place of thinking, I'm right. My mama told me I was great and I'm great. Even the bad guys really think they're the good guys. So, this is an exercise in erasing yourself and becoming other points of view. I think it's helpful to, I most writers I know are introverted. They tend to be more observers and sort of all their lot tend to be the quieter people who kind of hang back and watch, at the party instead of being the life of the party. They're back over, by the wall, maybe with a drink in hand, thinking, where's that person coming from? What makes him think he's all that? What does it feel like to be that person? We have and that's not always true. I also know a few extroverted writers, but not a lot of them, to tell you the truth. I think that we are professional observers of human nature, and a really important part of that is being able to shut down your own version of the story and enter other people's versions of the story.
Sometimes people will say to me, my last two books, the last one was set in Ireland, the one before it was partially set in Key West, Florida. And sometimes people will sort of get a little angry and be and say, you know, why are those books not set in Kentucky? You're from Kentucky. And you've written Appalachia,
Congo,
the American
Mexico,
Southwest, all
New
over,
Jersey,
right? So how do you
all over the
respond to
place.
that idea that a writer must only, you know, write about the place where they live?
Writers should write about what moves us. Good writing will only come from passion, from starting starting from a thing, starting with something we care about, a story we need to tell. And those stories often take us to other places. Of course, I have a loyalty to Appalachia. I feel very proud of my Appalachian identity. And as I've gotten older, I have come more and more to accept that sort of the mantle of being an Appalachian artist and understand how the fact that we're so misrepresented still in so much culture, American culture and, global culture, gives me a duty to write about Appalachia. Yes, I feel like I have that responsibility just as, as a person of color, will often feel a sense of responsibility to represent her experience of the world as a person of color and so forth, as a woman. Yes, okay, but life is long if we're lucky and we get to write a lot of things. And if we had to write the same story over and over of who am I? What am I proud to be? That would just get so old. I feel like the things that are important to me as an Appalachian probably transfer, probably are important to people from all over the place. And my job is to find our common ground in looking at sort of, the human condition. What are our big problems? What do we need to examine as people for our, as part of the human project? That's going to take me all over. And I usually begin with theme, with a big idea, sort of something I want to write about. And let's just take the example of the lacuna. I wanted to write about American culture, American history, and how did this thing happen in the 1950s that American government became so suspicious, very, very suspicious and controlling of culture, to the extent that anyone who was suspected of being like too progressive, like being too interested in civil rights or human rights or social welfare, was blackballed, blacklisted, lost their jobs, lost their livelihood. It's relevant because we're seeing some of that happen again. We're seeing inklings of that, and it could happen in on a much bigger scale if we don't watch out. So I thought that's an interesting thing to write about. Where did that come from? How do people get so scared that they went along with that? So that involved reading a lot of history books and then thinking, like, where was the fulcrum of that? How could I have a character who experiences that? He would be a writer who would lose his livelihood because he's suspected of being a communist, which he's not, but that's how it went in those days. And then backing up and giving him a story, like who would he associate with that would create those suspicions later in life? Well, where is a place where culture went the opposite way, where revolutionary artists were greatly celebrated and respected? Well, that was Mexico at the very same time. So I cooked up this plot, this story of this guy, Harrison Shepard, who is bicultural. His mother is Mexican. He's born in the US. He ends up living in Mexico, growing up in Mexico, ends up working for in this household of Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera, a very important revolutionary artist couple. And then he comes to the US and this happens and that happens. So I started with a question, then I developed it into this plot that really interested me that would kind of exhibit like walk us through how this stuff happens. And then he ends up being living in Asheville, which was a place I could research. I could do historical research there because there are neighborhoods that are still the same now as they were in the 1950s, 60s, or even 1940s. Okay, so long story short, I started with an idea, ended up having to set it in various places, which I researched very carefully, publish it. And what does my friend Silas say about this novel? That it's the most Appalachian of all my novels, maybe before Demon Coverhead. And I love that you say that because What that says is I'm still being Appalachian. I'm still writing about, I'm writing from who I am and the culture that I know, but I can take that, I can paint that across a very large palette, which is exciting as an for artists, and it's exciting for readers too.
Yes, and I especially love, the way it globalizes an Appalachian person in that beautiful way. And that what you're saying is a perfect example of how we have to find the ways that everything serves the story. So you were finding the place that best served that story, and it just works perfectly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, are there particular novels that come immediately to mind for you when I say sense of place?
I think all of my favorite novels are sort of embedded in place. I think of Marilynne Robinson and like all, I mean, all of her novels, I think, are set in pretty much the same, about like a 10 square mile area, maybe even smaller than that. But I feel like I've been there. I feel like I've lived that little town and know, those people and their relationship to the land. Wendell Berry, of course, is the greatest of all teachers, I think, about sense of place, because his people are their place. They're of their place. They have the dirt of the land under their fingernails, in all the best ways. So, I mean, honestly, it's something rural writers do this for me. When I think about it, I just think about Thomas Hardy. People who, and that's probably my bias as a rural person, even though I've lived in many of the world's great cities. I'm a rural person because when push comes to shove, if you ask me to think about place, I think about trees. I think about being outside and how a place with all its living species is connected to the people who live there.
Yes. Well, we've primarily been focusing on writing about place and fiction, but for the poets out there, how does place come into play for you when you're writing poetry?
Oh, still very much. I would say probably half of my poems are connected in some way to some biological event or process. I mean, I've written poems about trees, about moths, about plant, a particular plant with its own life history, and how that inspires me. And I know when I talk about this in the abstract, it doesn't sound very poetic, but ultimately, that's the challenge, is to find the poetry in these inspiring beings. And that's just because of the person I am, because I grew up in the country. My first and enduring forms of entertainment involve walking in the woods, seeing what I can see. When I was younger, it was also about like, what can I catch? Catching crawdads and frogs, and trying to make pets of them, and just really exploring the natural world still appeals to me just as much as when I was a kid. So I'll take a walk. We live, as on this farm that's mostly woods. I take a walk in the woods just about every day, winter and summer, and I always see something. Yesterday, I saw this, actually, day before yesterday, this amazing orchid, a wild orchid that people don't know that we have orchids in wild orchids in Appalachia, but we do. It's called a crane fly orchid, very beautiful. It's about all these flowers on this stalk, about 3 feet tall. And I said, that is wonderful. Tomorrow, I'm going to come back here with my camera, my phone, and take a picture of it. Well, I did, and it was gone. Something had come and eaten
Oh.
it. Drip the stalk clean. So this exquisite orchid, all these beautiful flowers, became dinner for something, a turkey, or I don't know what. I don't know what eats orchids,
That's
but
nature.
something ate it. And so we all consumed that orchid in our own ways, or aspired to. And something about that tells me there's a poem in there. It's just a little story, a little story.
I love it. Well, if you could offer just one tip or lesson to writers about capturing sense of place, what would it be?
It would be go there. Go there yourself. Put your feet on the ground of a place. There is no substitute. And take your time. Take a notebook and take lots and lots and lots of notes. Now, you could also take your phone and take videos. I've done both things. I've taken when I take do research trips, I do take videos, take pictures and recordings, but what I mostly do is fill up a notebook because if I can, ultimately, this place is going to have to be translated into words. So the more I can do that on the front end, the better, the more I'll have already done when I get back home. And by taking a notebook and a pen and just, using my senses, going on input mode, as my husband Stephen calls it, just shut off the noise of my own prejudices or expectations and just go on input mode and write down the leaves are there are more colors of green here than a dictionary has words, or the water sounds like music, or if I just really pay attention to what I'm hearing, what I'm tasting, what I'm seeing, and get it in words, then I will have, I mean, that's money in the bank for a writer to get back to my desk and just look at all these notes I took, and they put me back in the place. Now, pictures are also helpful, especially like, let's say when I went to Frida Kahlo's house for research for the Lacuna, I took 100 pictures because there was so much to look at. I would have had to spend, 25 hours in her kitchen to notice everything. So it was helpful to get back home. And when I wrote scenes that were set in her kitchen, I could l study those pictures and say, look at that golden teapot. Look at that butterfly shaped plate hanging on the wall. All of those things were available to me. So, but it boils down to go there and just digest a place with all your senses.
Well, I can't thank you enough to all the places you've taken me. I mean, I read the Lacuna long before I ever went to Mexico, and I felt when I opened the book, the pages of that book or the Poison One Bible or whatever book of yours I have read, I felt like the world I was sitting in fell away and I was being transported. To me, that's one of the things that a novel should do. And you're definitely one of the people that has kept that very much alive in contemporary American literature, in a time when a lot of other writers have not cared as much about sense of place.
Well, it's maybe repaying a debt because that's what fiction did for me. When I was a little girl in Carlisle, Kentucky, when I went to the library, I got so excited because I looked at all these books and just thought, look at all these places I can go. I can go. I couldn't go. We didn't have any public transportation. I couldn't even go to town until I could, talk my mother into taking us for some reason or other. But so I was very, very stuck in place and isolated in a real little town as a kid. But I had windows into the world, and I suppose that for me, that's one of the most amazing things a book can do is take a reader somewhere else in the world.
I agree. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome, Silas. It was such a pleasure, and I'm so proud of you for being our poet laureate, and for exactly this reason that you're doing these great things that help writers and readers all over Kentucky. So thank you from one Kentuckian to another. I appreciate you.
Wow, that means the world to me. Thank you so much. Writing Lessons is an initiative of the 2024-2025 Kentucky Poet Laureate. That's me, Silas House. I'm thankful for the support of the Kentucky Arts Council, the Carnegie Center for Literacy and Learning, the Office of Governor Andy Beshear, and Kentucky Humanities. This show is written, recorded, edited, and produced by me. I hope you will share the show with other writers, students, or anyone who is interested in the creative process. please subscribe to our show. And if you like it, I hope you'll leave a review or a 5-star rating. That'll help us get the show to more listeners. Thanks so much for listening to Writing Lessons.